Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Damn You Hollywood. I'm Robert Winfrey. I'm going to apologize at the outset here. I'm not having a good day. And if I'm off my game, that's why. There's nothing I'm going to go into, nothing that you care about. This is just your warning. If I'm off, or if I seem a little surlier than usual, it has not been a good day. And I'm going to do my best because I'm here with Mark, and Mark is the king of, you know what, this is not going to get me down. And I'm sitting here moping, preparing to you see, for the majority of us Mormons, when things go bad, you know, we don't drink. I don't know what other people do, other members of the church. I know there's a lot of people who drink. I'm preparing to spend the next 24 to 36 hours binging on pies and fried food and just wallowing in despair. And that's kind of how I do it. So, but
this
Mark.
This is how we do it. This is how we do it, baby. This is how we do it.
Yeah, meanwhile, Mark did a whole podcast yesterday being too ill to physically move, except in cases of greatest necessity.
That's right. We put a podcast in the can yesterday, Jesse Starcher, Ronnie Adams, and I, for the old source material for next week. The Hecate, Wonder Woman, the Hecate, and I literally did it from my bed. No cans, no microphone. Just talked into my cell phone. And with my, at one point dozed off, but yeah, did it from my bed because I was too physically ill to move. I'm good tonight. Tonight I am rolling in the deep. I have not puked today. I am not so lethargic. I can't chew. Today's a good day. Today was a good day.
All right. As Mark continues to blast me on various other outlets with, hey, Wonder Woman isn't going to suck. I'll believe it when I see it.
I'm just a tweeting machine, baby.
And in all seriousness, when I get done with that, watching that movie, and I tell the whole world, hey, it's just the first Captain America movie, and everyone tells me, shut up, remember that I'm right.
Nope. I'm going to be out in front of the movie theater with a trombone. And a sign that says, everyone should go see Wonder Woman, take your children. It's the greatest superhero movie ever.
I'm sure you... Well, A, I'm sure you will, and B, no.
Hooray for Wonder Woman. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da, Wonder Woman.
Anyway, all right. With the silliness
back
out of the way, tonight Mark and I will be reviewing... I'm not sure you can call it a smash hit, but I don't think you can call it quite a flop either. Pirates of the Caribbean 5, Dead Men Tell No Tales. Mark,
I would say the phrase here is it's a profitable disappointment.
We'll go with that. All right, Mark. Again, kind of before we get into this, I mean, this is a multi-billion-dollar franchise worldwide. This thing is going to make most of its money overseas as opposed to domestically, because the domestic returns for this are
abysmal.
No, lackluster. I mean, they're not abysmal, and we'll get into that specifically when we talk money.
$78 million so far.
And that's just domestically, and that's over the three-day weekend. I mean, worldwide, it's, you know, going to be fine. But domestically, we seem a little bit tapped out on good old Captain Jack. So, I'm curious, again, as I like to do this now. Any expectations for this movie going in? Because I had, like, one. I had two. One of which was a negative that did not pan out, and the other of which was... positive that kind of did. It kind of went negative. So a little of both worlds there.
Let me say this to you. If we didn't do this podcast and I didn't make a habit out of going to see all the blockbusters over the summer, this is one that probably could have waited until it was on HBO. After At World's End, I sort of just lost interest in the franchise. At World's End was so bad, in my opinion. You know, just the constant changing of... Well, I don't want to get into it now. But I did not particularly enjoy At World's End, and it really killed my interest in the franchise. So when On Stranger Tides came out, I didn't go see it in the theaters. I had zero interest in seeing this movie. I felt like, okay, they... Good, bad, or indifferent, they at least told the story of Jack and Diane, of Orlando Bloom and Keira Knightley. Their story was told. It was time to move on. And then they just came out with On Stranger Tides. And I think I saw that on the plane to New York, which is about the only way you were going to get me to sit down and watch the thing, you know, strapped in a chair with nothing else to do for several hours. So when they were advertising Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales, I have to say, there wasn't a lot of excitement on my part. This was not one that I was aching to go see. I saw it Sunday morning, and it was one of those where sometimes when my wife says you have to wait until Sunday to go see a movie, I'm like, you know, I'm like, I can't. It's, why are you doing this to me? This was one where I was like, is it, you know, like it's fine. You know, my choices were go hang out with my family at my in-laws for the third weekend in a row or go see the Pirates movie. I'm like, I'm going to go see Pirates. So I almost wanted to go see Baywatch, which also bombed, by the way. I wanted to go see Baywatch.
Yeah, but that one shouldn't have surprised as a bomb. And I am a little surprised you wanted to see it. It looks so terrible.
I needed a good laugh.
Why would you watch Baywatch?
As far as bro comedies go, it looked like the sort of mindless stupidity that I was in the mood for at the time, that my soul needs right now. In any case, I did my due diligence. I saw Pirates, and the question is, what were my expectations? Well, I expected to not fall asleep. I expected a return to form. I expected it to be the sort of rollicking adventure that Jerry Bruckheimer brought us with the first movie, and it about halfway met my expectations. I did doze off, though I don't know how much of that is the film's fault. We're talking maybe for like 5 minutes here. I sort of glazed over at one point. But I told you offline, my initial reaction to this thing was somewhere between and meh. It was okay. Next.
Yeah, I was really concerned about the quality of the CGI on Salazar's crew. And thankfully, it wasn't that bad. Other segments of this movie, I can't say the same about the visual effects, but his crew looks good.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking forward to Javier Bardem before I realized, no, this is a Disney property with all this, you know, what's expected of it. No, there's no, they took Ian McShane and made him, you know, not be awesome. And as great as Javier Bardem is, even he cannot overcome the mediocre writing. So, all right, let's jump into this. All right, we open with the son of Will Turner, Henry, finding his father magically and his dad telling him, no, I'm cursed, you see, and it won't break. Go live your life and be happy. Forget about me. Because he took over, you know, the duties of Davy Jones on the Flying Dutchman, ferrying the living, the dead from this world into the next. And really, the fact that he was performing his duties should have meant that he wasn't actually, like, deteriorating and becoming part of the ship. But this series has no sense of internal continuity as far as that goes. So, hey, this film, like, penalizes you for paying attention. He decides, no, I will free my dad because, you see, growing up without the influence of a father, it's not good. And he dedicates his life to studying the myths and ways of the sea. We flash forward 9 years where he is involved in a shipwreck while serving on a British Navy naval ship. Boy, that was redundant. Good job, Robert. Where the entire naval crew is massacred by the ghostly remnants of Captain Salazar and his crew. He tells young Henry Turner that, go find Jack Sparrow and tell him that when I get out of here, I'm going to eviscerate him. Which would have been a much better way to phrase that than poor Javier Bardem had to muddle through. Because he always leaves one man alive so that they can tell his story, because the dead, they can't speak for themselves, apparently. He paddles to the island of St. Martin, where he winds up. He comes back into the story after probably the best sequence in this movie. And I mean that not necessarily as the greatest of compliments. Captain Jack Sparrow is trying to rob the bank in the island of St. Martin, which is full of gold and, you know, stuff he wants. And he does it badly because he kind of sucks. All right? All the fangirls out there and people who love Captain Jack, I mean, he's a glorious Harlequin character. He's funny. He's engaging on many levels. He's become a bit one-note. I mean, the character arc that they actually gave him, they gave him a little character in Curse of the Black Pearl, and then he got actually a bit of an arc in Dead Man's Chest, and then since then it's no, just drink rum, mince around, say the funny line, and make the face. And Johnny Depp is perfectly happy to wear makeup, mince around, say the line, and make the funny face. They attempt to steal this brand new bank vault, and then, you know, abscond with it, but the vault is so well constructed and apparently placed immediately behind, like, the key support beam to the entire structure of the bank, which is not actually secured to its foundation. Look, again, this is a great scene if you're into the absurdity. As a guy who can't watch a movie without going, that doesn't work that way, this killed me. They wind up dragging the entire bank through the streets, with the vault door open, spilling the gold out onto the street as they are taking it away. We also are introduced to, what is it, Karina? Let me double check the name. Yeah, Karina Smith, who's a witch, which basically in this particular parlance means a woman with an IQ above, you know, 26.
50.
Okay, above 50. She knows about astronomy and math. She must be a witch.
Makes sense.
Mark, I put up with your misogyny offline because I love you, but please don't foist it on our listeners. No, seriously, I kept waiting for the Monty Python skit to break out just a little bit. I mean, again, we're not going to do the whole bit, but the amount of time someone said, "She's a witch," I was really hoping someone, we'd get just another bit of reference to it.
Does she weigh as much as a duck?
I mean, well, there's so much better writing in that movie than there is in this one. But she's to be hanged because she's a witch. She escapes because, again, she has an IQ above 50. And runs afoul of Captain Jack, who uses her as a means of escaping. They lose all the gold. His crew abandons him because he sucks. I mean, really? How could you follow this guy? And they actually do go over that. Like, no, we did all this. No, that was all terrible. And we all lost money on every venture. You're washed up. You've got no luck. You've got no ship. And now you've got no crew. So piss off. Henry washes up on the island. He's arrested. And they know he's a traitor because of his sleeves were ripped. And, which I find odd that, I mean, on the one hand, sure, I get that it's a symbol, right? But if the man was involved in a shipwreck and had to paddle his way to shore many miles in the open sea on a piece of driftwood, you'd think that there would be made a few allowances for the condition he would be in upon arrival. But not for, I mean, who lives on this island anyway? I mean, really, like, which is another gripe I have about this movie. They spend entirely too much time on this island. Anyway, Jack barters away his compass. The compass doesn't like being traded, so it actually releases Salazar from his ghostly prison. You know what? I might have even had a joke for that at one point, but I don't anymore. So Salazar now returns to his ways of murdering pirates and wanting to kill Jack Sparrow. Which I kind of get. I mean, really, pirates are not good. And he gets caught. They're going to execute him. They're going to execute Karina. Henry makes a miraculous entry along with Jack's crew, who showed up because Henry paid them. They all bust out. They get on his crappy little boat, because he has a new boat that kind of sucks. It's called the Dying Gull for a reason. Karina wants to find the Trident of Poseidon because she believes her father. Her motivations are never actually made clear. I mean, she's an orphan. She wants to be closer to her father, and he left her with a journal that gives, directions hypothetically to the Trident, which controls all. It's Poseidon's Trident. I mean, what do you want me to say? What do you want me to say here? She doesn't actually believe in the supernatural though at the beginning, which I find odd. Like, you're looking for a mythical item, but you don't believe in mythical items. The diary she had actually belonged to Galileo. And her father had left it with her when he dropped her at the orphanage. She doesn't remember any of this, but, that's what she's been told. And now she wants to get resolve her father issues. The Trident actually carries with it the power to break curses. So Henry wants it to break the binding of his father to the Dutchman. And Jack wants it because he can then reverse Salazar trying to violently murder him. And we're off to the races. We are reintroduced. Okay, I'm going to completely gloss over this character from here on out, but it does bear mentioning very briefly. There's a British naval officer who plays minorly into this movie. He then dies later, and his entire bits could have been written out and made the movie a lot better. And I hate saying that about David Wenham, because I like David Wenham, but it was a nothing role, and it should have been excised in editing. The writer never should have put it in there, much less like film editing. Like, the writer, whoever edited the script, should have been no. Anyway, Salazar's quest to rid the world of all pirates, which he had when he was alive, leads him to good old Hector Barbossa, who rules a pirate fleet with the power of the sword that he took from Black the End of On Stranger Tides. But he's powerless against Salazar because, you know, he's dead. And he makes a deal to potentially, you know, try to lead him to Jack and, you know, to help him exact vengeance in exchange for his life because, you know, pirate. There's a romance between Henry and Karina. A couple of pointless bits, including one where they try to force Jack to marry someone inside of a whale skeleton. Ugh.
Yeah.
This movie makes... Yeah, just... Ugh. There's a lot of things that should have been trimmed. Let me just put it like that. Anyway, they eventually find the trident with Barbossa, who double-crosses Salazar because pirate. And Salazar killed a bunch of his men, so he's none too fond of the man. Barbossa realizes that Karina is actually his daughter. He dropped her off at the orphanage. I'll save that for after the fact, when I talk about what I liked and didn't like. They eventually find the trident. There's a volcanic island with various precious gems placed in an exact replica of the sky. I can't stress enough how stupid that is. I mean, really?
It was a nice visual.
They're able to use it to find the trident. Salazar shows up. He goes through a pointless exercise where he possesses Henry. Again, so much trimming should have been done with this movie. They wind up breaking the trident, which breaks every curse. Salazar and his men become human again. There's still a fight because he still wants to kill Jack Sparrow, which, again, totally understandable. I forgot. Hector reconstitutes the Black Pearl. It goes from, you know, little tiny ship in a bottle to full-size ship again, which gets to reintroduce the monkey, which I hate the monkey. I just hate the monkey. As they're all climbing up the anchor from the bottom of the sea to get back on the ship before the ocean closes in around them, Barbossa winds up sacrificing himself to kill Salazar and a few of these other men. So he's gone right after Karina realizes, no, wait, you're my father, which really has to suck, by the way. I mean, as soon as it was made, it's like, no, it's your kid. Oh, he's gonna die. I mean, just duh. A given. So she takes on his last name. Henry is reunited with his father, who is reunited with his wife. Jack curses the whole thing as an exercise in sentimentality and futility and whatever else. He sets off to take back off over the horizon, and we get a post-credit scene that hints at the return of Davy Jones, who will want to exact vengeance on Will. All right. Mark, did I miss anything? Let's start there.
Nope.
Okay.
Seems like you got it all. I mean, nothing important, at least. Look, I'm going to keep this kind of short. Because I really don't have a whole lot to say about this movie. It felt like a soft reboot of the first movie. The plot is almost, in a lot of ways, the exact same as the first one. You have an army of undead zombie pirates wanting to exact revenge on Jack Sparrow for a thing he did. There's a MacGuffin. There's a race to get said MacGuffin. And whoever has the MacGuffin will have all the power. And it takes two plus some odd hours to get there. I would say this movie sorely lacks the spirit and the tension of the first movie. I went into the first movie thinking it was going to be dumb. And I was really surprised by how into it I was. You know, the really likable characters. You know, getting to know Will and getting to know the Keira Knightley character, they weren't solely relying on Johnny Depp to carry the picture. He's sort of there as almost comic relief because the story was about Will and Keira. I know I'm saying a character's name and an actor's name, but I can't remember what her name was.
Elizabeth, but don't worry about it. We're all following you.
Will and Elizabeth. That's the heart of the movie. And when they get together at the end, that's the resolution we were looking for. And I think Jack at the end gets his boat back, and you know that's his one true love too. So it was all nightly wrapped up by the end of that picture. At the end of this one, the astronomer character, the girl, Karina, she's fine, but she isn't nearly as personable as Elizabeth. Will Turner's kid, he's a nice-looking boy, but
I didn't think it was possible to write the masculine character as more of kind of, and I hate to phrase it this way because I don't mean to be, I'm going to say it. I didn't think they could write a masculine, romantic movie lead for this movie with less balls than they gave to Orlando Bloom in the first one. And yet, they did.
Yeah, he just lacks charisma. You know, he's a lot of sizzle and no steak. Like I said, good-looking kid, but I was not interested in his story. And I don't know if it's the writing or if it's the actor.
I'm blaming
Johnny
them both.
Johnny Depp does the same routine, but now Johnny Depp has fallen into the same into this category of I no longer cheer for him. See, in the first movie, he had a lot of charisma. He had, he was such a fun character that you rooted for his insanity. After the whole bank sequence, which is the best part of the movie, by the way, the bank sequence is by far and away not the prettiest. The stuff with the water at the end splitting like Moses is visually more appealing. But as far as action sequences go, it peaks with the bank heist. And he's so bad, you're like, okay, at this point, I hope the crew leaves you. I kept thinking about Black Sails and how, like, in the very first episode, he's, you know, the captain of that ship and in that show is facing a mutiny. And I was like, yeah, they were mutinying for far less good reasons than this crew should have. I just like there's nothing appealing about Jack Sparrow anymore. Now, if you like his routine, if you like his act, that's fine. And if you're going to see Jack Sparrow, as Robert said, turn to the camera, say a funny thing, make a funny face, okay. Certainly people like to go see the hits when they go see their favorite bands play. I get that, and I'm not knocking anyone for it. As a reviewer, looking at the craft of this thing, Johnny Depp has brought nothing new to this character. It is literally the hits. He's playing Hit Me Baby One More Time. You know, he's playing Pour Some Sugar on Me. He's playing Panama. He's playing Jump. He's doing all the bits.
Oh, Robert Cooper just wanted to throw something at you.
And again, if you like that sort of thing, great. If you're, to me, after the fifth time around, when that's all you're doing, you're not adding anything to the craft element of the film. You're just rehashing the same bit. So that was my biggest problem with him. And like I said, as a character, I no longer want to root for the guy. I don't want to see him succeed, which is a major problem when he's your hero, when he's your main protagonist. That's a problem when you don't want to see your protagonist win. Now let's move over to Jeffrey Rush, who plays Barbossa, who at least his character still has personality. His character still does things that matter. And Jeffrey Rush was born to play Barbossa. It's fine, but again, it's the same old thing. It's just a better thing than Johnny Depp's thing. Which brings us to our last character, Javier Bardem Salazar, which also ran Barbossa from the first movie. You know, with Barbossa and The Curse of the Black Pearl, there was a desperation. You know, they robbed this Aztec treasure hoard and they were cursed for it. And all he wanted was his humanity back. That's it. That's what he was being driven towards. He couldn't taste food. He couldn't enjoy life. And that's what was driving him, was, you know, getting that sense of humanity. With this one, you know, Javier Bardem was already killing pirates. Jack tricked him, basically. And he wants to kill Jack again. He just wants to kill Jack some more. He's like, I don't want to be undead, and I want to kill Jack. Wow, what an arc. And by arc, I mean straight line. He is no way different after what happens to him. And then when he finally dies at the end, it was like, okay, good. You know? So that kind of covers characters and performances. It's a mixed bag, to say the least. The action sequences in this thing were exhausting. I think at one point I nodded off where they finally chase Jack onto the beach and they realize they can't get out of the water. There was a part in the middle of all that where I just nodded off.
So you missed the zombie sharks.
I may have seen a little bit of the zombie sharks, but there was something where I was like, wait, what? And I kind of woke up and they were on the beach.
That's about it. You should have napped for like the 5 minutes after, because that's the whole let's trick Captain Jack into marrying this hideous woman with three kids.
That whole thing should have been cut. What a waste of a scene that was.
The only thing I liked about that was when Karina tricks him into saying I do.
Yeah. Anyway, as
everything
you know,
else,
the movie runs.
Barboza shoots the guy as they're coming up, and I went, oh, good.
But what a waste! What did that look? Patton Oswalt does a joke. Let me get through this, okay? Before you cut me off, Patton Oswalt does this really funny joke about shooting movies. And you have and how like being a director is such a guy thing, and he made a very phallic joke about it. He's like, I'm just shooting so much film, it's basically he's coming film. That's the joke, and that editing is the woman's role. They've got to now take all this film you've shot and make something out of it, make a film out of it, make a movie out of it, and so. You know, I have to take all of the sperm and make a baby out of it. That's the joke. Whether you find that funny is neither here nor there. But it's very, very true. Directors shoot. They take multiple cuts of things, even when they don't really need them. They just shoot. And then your editor is supposed to make a cohesive story out of it. That's where you get the old story about Star Wars being saved in editing. George Lucas, that hack, shot film. Loads of film, lots of film. Oh, the film he shot. And then the editors had to take this nonsense and try to make a film out of it, make an actual movie. Well, if the scenes you shot don't add to the narrative or don't add to a character portrayal, a character sketch, cut it from the fucking movie. Don't just throw shit in there to throw shit in there. That's that, and that whole sequence with the marriage. That's all that was. I saw no point to that whatsoever, and it took me out of the movie. I wanted to talk about the visuals for a second. I know you like, oh, science doesn't work that way, blah blah, yakety smackety. But I have to say, I thought when they finally got to the island, and then they're in the water. And the water separates, and there's that whole sequence. As a guy who's very fond of the aquarium and various places he's visited over the years, I really found that to be very pretty. And I had to say something extremely positive about this movie. Just watching the visuals of them interacting against the water that's being held still by magic, I was very taken in with those images. I thought they did a really good job of portraying, you know, what it would look like to be at the ocean bottom floor with the ocean on either side of you. And then it kind of gets ruined with that final anchor sequence because that went on forever. Holy cow, that last anchor sequence goes on for at least 20 hours. drove me
It's almost
nuts.
As bad as the stupid airplane taking off at the end of Furious, what, 6?
Yeah. So overall, I would give this movie about a solid B. You know, and that's being a little on the generous side. Because it's not a bad movie per se. It's in a lot of ways copy and paste from the first movie with less charismatic characters. But some very pretty visuals and one action sequence that was really a lot of fun. And, you know, it's kind of the Jason Statham with a baby moment.
You just had to remind me of that moment. Sorry, I joke, because it's a great moment. But I'll be brief, because I agree with a lot of what Mark said. Again, the editing on this movie is terrible. That whole marriage sequence needs to be gone. They spend too much – I said this before. They spend too much time on the island. I mean, he shows up to rob the place, and we spend the next, like, hour there. I mean, that's only a moderate exaggeration, mind you, in terms of actual screen time. And it sets up, I got a chuckle out of the gag with Jack and the Guillotine as it spins. Even though, and I hate to spoil this for everybody, given the rate of rotation, doesn't work that way. It would not have started declining. The manifestation of inertia, commonly referred to as centrifugal force, even though it's not a force, it's a manifestation of
really?
Inertia.
Are you really doing this? This is the same guy who I think it's in On Stranger Tides where he's bouncing around on a fucking stick that he's tied to.
If we'd reviewed Stranger Tides, I would have brought it up there too.
Oh, for God's sakes. Okay.
Again, I laughed the first time they did it. It's like, oh no, he's spinning and it's coming close. I mean, again, my head goes, no, that doesn't work. But on some level, it's like, oh, that's actually kind of clever and amusing. And then he spins for like 5 minutes. I mean, it just kept going.
This movie is just a pile of excess. It's literally like the editors. I'm gonna do another joke here. I can't remember where I got. This might have been like Robot Chicken or something, where they're talking about like Britney Spears and Britney Spears is a nutritionist. It's just like maybe you shouldn't eat all that gravy. It's like shut up. Like the editors are just in the corner of the room going, maybe we need to cut one or two of these sequences. Shut up, you! People love this shit. Like the Vince McMahon approach to movie making, chocolate titties.
You know, I would love to get through a review without referencing Vince McMahon. I really would. I don't think it'll happen.
I really,
and it's not. And that's not just you. I've done it too. Between the two of us, we need another example we can cite.
You know, I thought you were going to say I'd like to get through the review without constantly having to bring up chocolate titties.
No, I've conceded that your mammalian fixation will not go away.
Nope.
Wait, that's the wrong word. I said mammalian, which actually makes sense given that we're mammals. Mammarian?
See? Mammarian.
That's the closest I can come. Your fixation will never go away. Fair enough. Jack Sparrow, I gotta say this. There's a serious flaw in the writing of this character in that he has become The Simpsons
unlikable.
Made a great gag about this. He's the I didn't do it. All right, Mark laughs because he gets the reference. For those of you who don't, there's a Simpsons bit where Bart becomes famous for saying, I didn't do it after causing calamity. And people laugh, and again, he gets famous. And he starts feeling bad because he wants to be more. He wants to, you know, I don't want to just be one line. And everyone tells him, shut up and say the line. And then at the end, they don't find him funny anymore. And he learns that show business is a very harsh world, and everyone gets to spout their catchphrases. And we're kind of like that with Captain Jack Sparrow. He was a great addition to the first movie. Again, wonderfully charismatic, goofy in the right way. Bad enough at what he was doing to kind of make you go, okay, I can root for you because you're a pirate, which is a bad thing, but you're kind of bad at it, so it's I'm okay with it. And a bit of just, you know, the Rube Goldberg brilliance that would shine through every now and then.
He was a lovable scamp.
Okay, he was Bender, sure. And that's fine, because he actually gets some good moments in the first movie. He goes a little bit beyond just, you know, the gags. Then he gets something of an arc in the second one, where he's desperately trying to avoid being killed. He turns into a coward. He discovers some heroism at the end, you know, etc. And then everyone kind of it feels like everyone involved in the making of these movies, you know, listened to a focus group. He said, no, I just want him to do the funny. And everyone went, okay, he will forever only do the funny. It's hampering his character. People I saw this movie with, one of whom does not think about movies like I do. And Mark, I articulated this as well. Someone asked me, why are we still cheering for this guy? And, I mean, for me, it's like, no, I haven't cheered for him in, you know, five movies. But I'm me. I am not the norm. I accept this. That's fine. Now that, you know, someone like Mark, and I mean that affectionately, because Mark and most of these shows does represent the average moviegoer, while I represent the neurotic Aspie guy in a... All right? I get that. That's the dynamic here, and I'm okay with it. I am okay with it, really. So for Mark, who argued with me at length that, you know, a couple of the Transformers movies don't suck out loud, now says, are we sure we should still be cheering for this guy? There's maybe a problem here. Okay, what else? What else did I have? Again, the editing, like, most of the stuff on the island can be cut. The David Wenham's character can be cut. They just spend too much time there. I don't know how you take Javier Bardem and make him less awesome, but congratulations, Disney, you did it.
Made him thoroughly uninteresting.
I know.
I mean,
Javier Bardem.
We're rising to the level of Marvel villain in how uninteresting this character is.
Yeah. We really are. And you've got a great actor in Javier Bardem, a truly great actor. And you put him in a role that's supposed to be scary. I mean, hypothetically, right? This guy has menace, Igan, in theory. And Javier Bardem can be a scary man when he wants to be. That is well within his ability to do. And you give him a bit of a visual effect that can contribute to that. And then, because it's a Disney movie aimed at kids, no, he can't actually be scary. I mean, they tried to give him menace by having him kill people. However, when everyone he kills is a faceless extra, it doesn't mean anything. I mean,
he also does it, like, slightly off-screen. Like, he's killing people in the background.
Yeah.
Did you notice that? When he was killing people on Barbossa's boat, it was like there was a line of guys, and he's killing people at the back of the frame.
Yeah, it actually takes until, like, his second or third for you to realize that, A, it's him, and B, he's gutting them. I mean, it's horribly composed if you want to make an intimidating villain. I mean, Davy Jones, since we're going to do this, in the third one was where I thought he finally got to kind of just be a villain. And he kills people you actually know and have some attachment to, or at least some reference point for. Here you have a guy willing to, you know, destroy entire ships, you know, murder every pirate in sight just on principle, but you can't actually have him do any of those things because we're scared of scaring kids. It's terrible.
I don't know if they're scared of scaring kids. I think they're scared of pissing off parents. Kids don't
Either
scare
way.
So easily.
Either way.
Well, There's a difference.
Okay, there's a difference. And again, you could solve this problem so easily by having him kill one of those, like, comic relief characters who get lines but no names and who've been around for, like, two movies.
Yeah.
Like, those guys at the end, okay, how about we tell each other where our treasure's buried in case one of us gets out of here? He could kill one of them. Then the audience that knows, oh, wait, I know this character. I have some degree of investment in. They said lines, and he killed them. But, hey, apparently not. I will say this. Leave it to Jeffrey freaking Rush to find, to just steal anything approaching acting in this movie. His face when he realizes who Karina is and she doesn't yet know he's her father, as he's walking away from her, is tremendous. Jeffrey Rush has routinely had some of the best acting in all of these movies. And for anyone who brings up, again, Johnny Depp's performance, he's not, there's nothing there. It's a performance. Jeffrey Rush actually gets into a bit of the emotional meat of his character. In the first one, it's, again, his bit about, I don't feel anything. And I'd kind of like that to change. It makes sense.
Sure.
In the third, he's less of an issue. Still there because he wants to, you know, return the wildness to the ocean. In the fourth, when he talks, he just gives the monologue about the pearl being taken by Blackbeard. Because you get no visual reference for that. There's no flashback. It's just him talking with Jack Sparrow. And it's pretty great. It's easily the best part of that movie. So here, for him to kind of deal with the emotions that go with, you know, I'm kind of a scumbag, and he wears that title proudly, but I got a kid now, and this changes a few things, and you know, trying to process that. Again, Jeffrey Rush manages to steal the movie in terms of what you actually remember, because he does a tremendous job displaying a man trying to battle those emotions. So much credit to Jeffrey Rush for that. And I think that's about all I had. Again, there's a lot of excess in this movie. A lot.
Oh, a lot of excess. All right. Well, with that said, you know what it's time for. Hello?
Here comes the money.
Here we go. Money talk.
Here comes the money.
All right, on a $230 million budget, which means we're aiming for around $500 million, clearing $500 million to really make this thing a worthwhile effort. At the time of this podcast, according to Box Office Mojo, we have a worldwide cum of $326 million. Rotten Tomatoes had an article, which I'll pull up on my I'll pull up in just a second. It actually tops the worst Memorial Day opening in like 18 years. So, is it going to make money? Yeah. Is it going to top $500 million? Probably. I think people will still go to see it. Is it going to be wildly profitable? No. We thought this might make $1 billion. It's not going to make $1 billion. Box office. Pirates tops worst Memorial Day weekend in 18 years. It won the weekend, but it didn't do as well as they had anticipated.
Hey, Mark.
Yes, sir.
Who accurately predicted the order of the top four for this weekend?
You did.
Yay, me.
Hooray for Robert. Domestic, it's pulled in about $78 million. Foreign, we're at $247 million. Where the weekend, as Robert said, Pirates came in at number one, Guardians number two, Baywatch three. Yes, to my mother-in-law out there who is not having a good day either, a special shout-out to my brother-in-law who was in a car accident today. He's fine. But, you know, being in a car accident is never a good thing. In any case, so she's not having a good day, so I don't want to pick on her too much. But to the woman who told me that Baywatch was going to be the number one movie in America.
I think she said worldwide.
worldwide. Sorry, yes. Pirates, Guardians, Baywatch, Alien Covenant, and then coming in at number five, Everything Everything. Debuting at number, keeping its place at number six was Diary of a Wimpy Kid. Snatch with Amy Schumer and Goldie Hawn fell from 4 to 7. King Arthur fell from 5 to 8. The
also
Boss
terrible.
Baby, by the way, the Boss Baby has already been greenlit for a Boss Baby 2.
Of course.
I want you to know that.
This is
that,
why we
that
can't felt... have nice things.
The Boss Baby fell from 8 to 9. Beauty and the Beast, 9 to 10. And Fate of the Furious fell from 7 to 11. And then after that, nothing matters. Nothing matters at all. Smurfs made more money this weekend than Kong Skull Island. Anyway.
Sure. Smurfs is rewatched by children when their parents are just sick of them.
Where we stand right now worldwide, Beauty and the Beast is still number one. It's the first movie, I believe, to have crossed $500 million domestically for the year. So it's kicking in. Nothing's even close. Nothing's even close. Fate of the Furious is at number two. That's still got over $1 billion, and there's about $9 million-ish between them. Guardians of the Galaxy is creeping towards $1 billion at $793 million. Logan has settled in at $600 million, which was what we said it was going to settle in at. Kong Skull Island settled in at $565 million. The Boss Baby is kicking ass and taking names, baby. Woo! Boss Baby, hell yeah, $477 million. Robert Winfrey, can't knock the hustle. Can't knock the hustle, baby.
Is that a line from the movie or something?
That's just me being very excited that Boss Baby has made almost as much money as Kong Skull Island.
Okay, you be excited about that.
I will.
I hope that goes well for you.
50 Shades Darker is still in the top 10 at number 7. Your Name, which is a foreign film, at number 8. Triple X, The Return of Xander Cage, coming in at number 9, and The Great Wall at number 10. And Pirates is at number 11 with $326 million. I suspect after this weekend, though everyone will be going to see Wonder Woman and Captain Underpants, my kids can't wait for Captain Underpants. It's all they've talked about. It's all they've
talked
about.
You have failed to
raise
your children adequately.
Don't say that about my children and all my parenting. It's offensive. My kids.
I'm sorry. Did I offend you?
My daughter wants to go see Wonder Woman, but not before she's seen Captain Underpants. This is all my son will talk about. Okay? He was all about the Boss Baby until he saw the commercial for Captain Underpants. And now that's all he cares about, is Captain Underpants. So, while everyone goes out to the movies this weekend to see Wonder Woman and Captain Underpants, I'm sure after this weekend's totals, Pirates of the Caribbean will have buoyed its way into the top 10. Domestically,
considering how low the
that's
threshold is for the top 10, yeah.
Domestically, again, Beauty and the Beast has crossed the $500 million mark. The closest anyone's coming to getting anywhere near Beauty and the Beast domestically is Guardians of the Galaxy for $340 million, then Logan and Fate of the Furious, then the Lego Batman movie, another one of Robert's favorites.
I hate you
Get
all
Out.
So much.
The Boss Baby at number 7, Kong
Still
Skull
hate
Island,
you all.
Split and 50 Shades Darker. And the Power Rangers is still not profitable.
I mean, are we supposed to be proud of this list? I'm genuinely like, man, hang on. People of the world.
Oh, no.
This is what you choose for entertainment. Are we proud of ourselves about this?
Alien Covenant's at number 15 domestically. It's between A Dog's Purpose and The Shack.
Yeah. Again, I really have to – I forget who said it, but I believe there is a line about how you can legitimately judge a society or a civilization based on the forms of entertainment they choose and what it says about them. I forget who said it. I think he had a list. I think it's actually been, like, categorized and marked. Like, okay, society enjoys X type of entertainment. They're at roughly this point.
All right. Well, next weekend, as I said, the only two movies worth a shit are Captain Underpants, the first epic movie brought to you by Fox. Fox is going to be kicking ass, man. Kicking ass and taking names this year. And Wonder Woman, brought to you by Warner Brothers. The single best comic book movie ever made since The Dark Knight. That's what they're calling this one. Everything
so
else
did,
is
none
not
of these people see Captain America, the First Avenger?
No, no one saw it. Everything else coming out is either not in wide release or whatever, so it's like, it doesn't really matter. So obviously Wonder Woman is going to be the number one movie in the world this weekend.
Yeah.
I suspect, what do you think? Think Guardians holds on to number two or it falls
That's
to...
Tough believe it or not, it's kind of tough between Guardians and Underpants here. I'll say Wonder Woman, Guardians, Pirates, Underpants.
Underpants. Yeah, I would. Guardians pulled in $27 million this past weekend domestically. I think Captain Underpants will do better than that. So I think it's going to go Wonder Woman, Underpants, Pirates, Guardians. That's my prediction.
I don't know. I've not heard good things about Pirates Holdover.
Yeah, but I mean, we're talking. But again, we're talking. Every weekend is diminishing returns. So if Guardians is theoretically going to make less than $27 million this weekend coming up, all Pirates has to do is beat $27 million domestically.
I don't know. Again, I'm not completely sold. Can I factor in the whole week, maybe, but and I think that's going to be a relatively tight race, all things considered.
All right. Well, we'll certainly see what happens.
You know, Ghostbusters had a lot of positive reviews too. I wonder if Wonder Woman's falling into that same category where no one wants to say anything bad about it for fear of being labeled a misogynist.
Can we hold that conversation until we actually talk about Wonder Woman? Because I actually want to address that in all seriousness.
No, it's a topic that deserves to be discussed. When you and I said Ghostbusters was mostly crap, and, you know, 70% of the, I mean, look, you enjoyed it, right, generally? You thought there were good parts to it. I thought the whole thing needed
to... I defended that movie. I defended everything about it.
Some of what you only did to annoy me, I know, because there's things that you've since said, like, yeah, no, that was terrible.
I still think it's a better villain than Zool in the first one. But my point is, when we actually talk about Wonder Woman, I want to address the idea of cheerleading a movie and inflated reviews. But we're here to talk about Pirates. I want to stay on topic.
Yeah, okay. But again, just... Because you and I realized that, like, Ghostbusters had been rendered uncriticable by the social commentary, not even in the movie, but just surrounding it. Like, it's a bunch of women in this role. And clearly, if you think it's bad, you must hate women. Like,
right.
Okay.
No, exactly.
You started with A and went to cuttlefish. Like, these are not related.
All right. Before we get into our next bit, and everyone knows what our next bit is,
Oh, wait. Before we do that, I have one thing to say that's kind of related to the money, as far as this movie being a disappointment in terms of its financial returns. Okay. Transformers is going to make a lot of money. All right. We all know this. Mark, I think you and I have both said it's probably a $1 billion picture, right?
Yep.
Transformers has been doing the same thing. Like, Transformers and Pirates both doing the same thing, basically. We had a good friend of ours link a video about why no one can remember what's in Transformers. Like, they're just so poorly constructed, and it's being poorly written and shot and everything else. like, they're so bad, your brain rejects entering them into long-term memory, right? But this has the goldfish effect of, you know, 2 years later, I can re-release the same movie and no one will remember it, so they'll all pay to see it again. Pirates has routinely had one or two things that are good and memorable in all of them. Again, even the ones that are not good in totality, there's something about them that sticks in your mind. There's an attempt to make a coherent film. Transformers is a mess. And because it's a mess, you just kind of go, nope, I will not remember this. So when the mess comes back 18 months later, you think it's brand new because you actually don't remember the mess in the first place. And that's, I think, where Pirates has gone wrong. They've done too much right on too many occasions to be as that to be as forgettable as you need to be to proceed with the, well, we're just going to throw crap on the screen approach to movie making.
Okay.
And no one see Transformers. Mark and I will suffer. No one else has to.
Great. Are you ready?
Hey, look, if they start paying me to say go see the movie, I might say it. Until then, all you get is my perspective. And my perspective is if we can get these things to flop, maybe Michael Bay will just go away.
Yeah, none of those things are happening. Good luck.
I'm well aware.
Hit the button.
No, God, please, no, 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 no!
So this is Pirates Week here on the Rattlesnake Broadcasting Network, and as such, we are reviewing all things Pirates. We reviewed Nightcrawler on Source Material, which is semi-pirate related. Tonight, we're reviewing Pirates of the Caribbean. Tomorrow, we're reviewing Ailstorm. Thursday, we're reviewing Black Sails, and Friday, Screaming Boy has a pirate show set up. And now I normally don't get into voices. I'm much more likely to start singing things, you know, but the whole point of this bit, as we've said in the past, is to mock the reviewers and how badly they do their jobs. In this particular case, the reviews themselves weren't so bad as the need to put nautical puns in all of these reviews. And if they're going to be hacks and put useless nautical puns in their professional reviews, then I'm going to be a hack who's going to read them in a pirate voice and not a good one. I don't do this voice well. This is not a voice I'm proud of. But if people who get paid to write reviews are going to write stupid nautical puns, then I'm going to do a stupid pirate voice. Are you ready?
You know what? As ready as I can be.
Hannah Woodhead of Hey You Guys. Yar, cinematic fool's gold. Choppy waters be ahead for the franchise.
I mean, somebody wrote that. This is what kills me about these things. We're not talking, like, Mark and I say stupid stuff, right? Because we don't rehearse this. Not just this bit, but, like, these shows. Like, we know in advance, okay, we're going to be seeing these movies. We're going to be on at this time. But we don't, like, get together and go, okay, here's the format. Here's the points I want to make. Here's the points you want to make. Here's a preview of, you know, the money. Here's a preview of the critics. And we're out. I mean, we know the format at this point because we kind of stumbled onto it and it works, so we're keeping it. But we don't – a lot of what we say is, well, thought ahead, off the cuff, based on our conversation here. Mark will say something that will give me a different angle to think about something, so I might rephrase something I have prepared to say. He might articulate it better. I mean, I've said this before. He's changed my perspective on a couple of different movies just in these conversations. So there's a degree of, again, kind of improv here. We are growing and developing our thoughts and experiences as we go along. So you get some stuff that is essentially off the cuff. So we say some occasionally stupid things. which is fair. He and I both are aware of it. But if you are a writer, okay, you have so many opportunities to refine what you do. You have it in your head. You think about it. You write it out. So there is this delay between thought and however long it takes you to type out said thought. At which point you can kind of go, okay, I don't like the wording. Maybe I don't like this phrase. Even if you do, you can keep it. Finish your whole thing, and then you reread it. And then you submit it, and then there's an editor who theoretically reads it. Before it all, so there's all these fail-safes, right? There are all these points where you have theoretically intelligent people able to look at something like this and go, you know, this is not the best idea. This is really, the nautical puns are not the best idea we could have here. Let's try again. Let's do better. And somehow, that whole system collapsed. I mean, you open with, hang on, did you add the yar or was that actually typed out?
No, I added yar.
Okay, thankfully, because I might have just lost whatever shred of hope I had in humanity. I mean, I get that you want to be clever. I really do. And you want to try and be different. You want to grab someone's attention. But how do you not realize that every half-assed jackanape talking about this movie is going to make crappy nautical puns? All you do, I mean, by attempting to be as clever as everyone else in the exact same way, you have actually achieved the opposite effect of your intended goal.
For the adult professional writers who actually wrote something and didn't do a nautical pun, I'm just going to read it in my normal voice. Roxana Haddadi of Chesapeake Family Magazine. Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales is an egregious example of bloated franchise filmmaking and exercise stuffed with idiocy and sorely lacking in fun.
See, I'm not sure I'd agree with that. I mean, again, bloated, sure.
I don't.
Hang on, let me be very specific.
Okay, but hang on. I mostly read it because of the lacking in fun thing, which every time somebody writes this, it's like, who are you to judge what's fun and what's not fun? What are you, the king of fun? We say this almost every week, but like, I really wish writers would stop doing it.
I mean, and really, there's so many better ways to articulate that point. I mean, all you have to do is say the tone of this is less lighthearted and somewhat less fun-inducing than other entries into the franchise. Now, Mark, would you agree with that statement?
Yes.
See? And I managed to do that without sounding like some jackass telling you all how to have fun. I mean, again, yes, it's bloated. Yes, it's movies by committee. Yes, it's another franchise film. All of which are bad, generally. But there are moments of genuine fun to be had in this movie. Again, that bank scene is great. And I hate things that don't work that way in film. Not always, but, you know, kind of generally. I used to like the movie Armageddon. I really did. Then I realized just how... everyone who, like, has heard me on this show, like, wait, what? Yes. I'll say it again. Do you need an example of me being able to differentiate my enjoyment between quality film work? I have been known to enjoy Michael Bay's Armageddon. Feel free to throw stuff at me. I probably deserve it. Until I realized, there's two things scientifically about that I realized don't work. One, they couldn't actually get off the asteroid that way. And two, I read a scientific, this is a real thing. A scientific journal actually posited the question, could Bruce Willis have saved the world in this way? So a bunch of astrophysicists and mathematicians got together and calculated the force required to split said asteroid. And we're not even close. Not even close. That kind of ruined it for me. But I'll still enjoy that from time to time because, again, I can like things that aren't good, and I don't have to defend them as good. But anyway, yeah, the bank scene is a lot of fun. Depp gets a few good laughs. I mean, again, this is not generally speaking, and I hate to phrase it this way, there's not as much fun in the same vein as the other films. But to say it just doesn't have fun or is severely lacking, I don't think is accurate. Oh, one other thing about this movie I forgot to mention. Paul McCartney, or whatever body double you are after the real one died. The Beatles suck. Go away.
Oh, stop.
God, I hate the Beatles. Deal with it.
Hey, I gotta read you one from our friend from last week.
Oh,
you know, the
joy.
One that the one that thought you know, the only way the aliens would pay attention to us is if Trump nukes Texas. Well, he's
I really
made
wish
my list
just
of favorite reviewers.
This guy.
Nope. I want to give him as much press as possible. So yes, he's our friend.
Not our friend.
Rohan Nahar of the Hindustan Times. Yar! Johnny Depp is adrift at sea, shipwrecked aboard a sinking vessel, drowning in a typhoon of CGI murkiness. Savvy? I did not add that savvy part. That's actually in there.
Particular gentleman, I'm impressed he even knew how to Google nautical puns. I mean, I almost don't want to talk about this guy because he's so stupid. Okay, Johnny. This movie is going to make money. Let's be clear about that. Is Johnny Depp playing the same character? And I don't mean the same character in name. I mean like the exact same character as the previous, you know, four or five movies. Sure. But he's still doing it with... Let me put it like this. I don't think he's phoning it in. I don't think anyone is asking him to do anything other than, you know, again, say the line. But he's not just, like, showing up for a paycheck. He's still somewhat invested in the process. And, yeah, there's issues with the franchise, but... Savvy.
Matt Goldberg of Collider. Ahoy, mateys. What the pieces remain? There's no life left in this franchise. It should have sailed off into the horizon 10 years ago. The pirate's life is over.
You know, I won't disagree with parts of that. But again, I have to question your... I mean... This is by your name, right? There's a great bit from The Crucible. You know, I know we've kind of diminished this point with our society and the way we do things, but it's my name, and I can only ever have one under heaven. And this is what you're attaching to it? Like, you are willful. If anyone Googles you or any resumes you submit, there's now going to be forever by your name and associated with you that. Are you really happy with that?
Okay. I'm going to read this last one, and then I think we're done with this bit, because I can't keep doing this voice anymore. Mike Ryan of UpRocks. Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales is practically incoherent.
Oh, that's
3 out of 10
true.
Stars. Yeah, I was like, what the fuck is he talking about?
Okay,
I mean
look. There's problems, right? There's so many problems. We talked about them. It's incoherent. Really? Like, how do you not understand? Because it's all spelled out on screen. Again, there's actual dialogue where they literally lay out each character's motivation. In fact, I believe there's a sequence where Barbossa and Jack debate their dueling motivations, while in the background... Henry and Karina debate theirs while tied to the mast. There is actually a scene in the movie where every character explains why they want the MacGuffin. And somehow you can't follow this?
Yeah, this person shouldn't be a professional reviewer.
I mean, look, here's what kills me. There are actually incoherent movies. Mark and I have seen a few, and we've talked about a few, where there's a legitimate gripe to be made about the ability of the movie to communicate to the audience. That's what incoherent means. It means the audience does not understand. And there's a few scenes in this movie that are visually incomprehensible. That bit where Jack is like being chased by Salazar while jumping on the cannons up and down each side of the... It's a mess, visually. It's a mess. But there's never
right,
any...
But the
like,
plot of the,
no,
the plot of this thing couldn't have been easier to follow. Salazar
look, we all want
to kill
the
Jack. Weapon. Yeah. And Salazar wants to kill Jack. Ta-da!
Which he says multiple times.
Right. It's the first bit of the movie. Go tell Jack I'm finding him and I'm going to kill him. Okay.
And then he says it again and again and again and again.
And then he tries
I mean,
to do it at the very end of the movie. Like, all right, we got it.
Just then, yeah, again, he gets uncursed and returned to mortality. And immediately decides, no, I must kill Jack Sparrow.
Right.
I mean... How do you not, in all seriousness, how does that not translate to you? You have visual evidence of all of them. You have auditory evidence of all of them. I mean, do you need tactile stuff here? Does the studio and the cinema need to provide you with something to touch that will convey this message as well?
Maybe they need, like, a Venn diagram or some shit.
I mean, and it kills me because it actually renders less effective the argument that movies are incomprehensible when they actually are. It's half the problem with, you know, politics and fight promotion. The UFC spent years using hyperbole to tell everybody that so-and-so was the best ever when it wasn't true. And then every now and then a fighter or two comes along that maybe is the best ever. So you want to tell people, hey, so-and-so's the best. You should watch them. But you've said that for 5 years about 3/4 of your roster. It doesn't actually mean anything. Saying a
this
movie
is the
is
single
greatest.
Hang on, this is the single greatest night in the history of WCW. I heard that shit every Monday for about 5 years, right up until the end.
We love you, Tony. Yeah, again, hyperbole and repetition thereof diminishes its effectiveness. So here we have people saying stuff is incomprehensible when no. I mean, Mark, you and I are intelligent men, but we're not, like, above, I don't want to say, I mean, we are not significantly outside standard deviations. You're smart, college educated, I'm smart, working on college education, but we're not, you know, aberrant, right? I mean...
No, I'm not a genius by any stretch of the imagination.
Right. I'm not a genius. I mean, I sometimes feel when we do this, because this relates specifically to movies, there's a bit in the Simpsons episode where Homer gains a normal IQ. He actually says it at one point. It's like 104. Which is, I believe, well within normal. And he goes to see a movie, and everyone's laughing, and he's pointing out all the plot holes. He gets thrown out of the theater, and the usher yells, you know, point out your plot holes elsewhere. And he cries to the heavens, is there no place in the world for a man with 100, again, like 4 IQ? And I feel like that sometimes, especially when we do this. Like, these are people whose job it is to analyze and review and impart knowledge, right? That's the goal here. The goal is to educate and inform moviegoers about your perspective based on your experience, your education, your ability to communicate, so on and so forth. That's the goal, right? This is the rough equivalent of someone looking at a red truck drive by on the freeway and go, oh, look, a blue Prius. I mean, it's just so depressing. I'm going to go eat a pie.
And I think that brings us to the end of this show. As I said, it's Pirates Week all week long. Nightcrawler, Ailstorm, Black Sails, random pirate movies. Next week, we will be reviewing the Hecatia on Source Material. That's a Wonder Woman book. We'll be reviewing Wonder Woman right here on the Rattlesnake Broadcasting Network.
Yay. Feel the excitement.
On Wednesday, the Metal Hammer of Doom will be reviewing new Dream Evil. And in theory, though I make no promises, we'll be looking at Superman Returns. Again,
there's some good
I'm not
to
promising.
Superman Returns. There's a lot of good.
I'll be defending it, so I'll be looking for it.
I can help. I can give you like specific examples if you'd like.
I got to watch the movie again. So that's what's going on the Rattlesnake Broadcasting Network. Robert, what do you got going on?
Well, for those of you who are, you know, into the MMA scene, this past Sunday at 8 p.m., myself, Jeff Harris, and Pat Mullen reviewed UFC Fight Night 109, which wrapped up a grand total of like five and a half hours before the show went live. Yay, early morning cards. And previewed UFC 212, which will come your way this Saturday. I will have live coverage in the MMA Zone of 411 Mania. I am sincerely hoping that Jose Aldo and Max Holloway both make it to the cage. Because I love that fight. Now look, there are two fights on that card I'm looking forward to. One is Aldo versus Holloway. The other's on the prelims. It's Moraes versus Austin Sal. If Aldo and Holloway falls through, I don't know what they'll do with that card. Because the new main event will be Claudia Gadelha and Karolina Kovalkiewicz. That is not a joke. That is not an exaggeration. That is the co-main event that would be bumped up to main event status if the main event falls through.
Well, hopefully they'll keep Jose Aldo wrapped in bubble tape until then.
He doesn't... you frickin'... I need a name for people who subscribe to the cult of Connor. I really do.
Yep. Everyone's made of glass in the UFC. They all keep breaking.
Well, Chris Weidman and Cain Velasquez certainly are.
All right, man, I'm tired. I want to get out of here. Anything else?
Yeah. So we'll be reviewing UFC 212 the Sunday after that, so that would be the 4th. And I got to double check this. On that show, the 4th, we'll also preview Fight Night 110 for the 11th of June. Mark, I'm going to give you the main event, and I want you to have a towel ready.
I know. I'm excited.
Mark Hunt fights Derek Lewis.
Oh, sucky now. Ha-ha. Black on Samoan crime, baby. Woo!
I really shouldn't have to express how much I'm not looking forward to this card, if that's the main
event. I really can't tell you just how naked I'll be during that fight. I'll be very naked.
And now that I'll be going to bleach my brain.
I will be naked and playing a trombone during that fight.
The rest of that card is Derek Brunson versus Dan Kelly, Dan Hooker versus Ross Pearson, Tim Elliott versus Ben Wynn, and Alexander Volkanovski versus Mizuto Hirota. It's not a good card. Oh, it gets worse. Do you know the next the event after that for the 17th?
No.
The Fight Pass exclusive, UFC Fight Night 111, headlined by Holly Holm versus Betch Cohen.
Yeah, and I was going to say, yeah, Holly Holm versus Chick Corea. I remember that one in Singapore.
There's one fight Mark will like on that card. Because Andrei Arlovsky's fighting Marcin Tybura.
Oh, boy. All right, are we done here?
Terrible card. Like, the next, like, four events are just not good. So stop by in my, again, I have live coverage of those events in the MMA zone of 411mania.com. Please stop by and say hello. Some of these I'm going to need the help. I'm going to need the moral support. And I'm hoping, sincerely hoping, that they're better in practice than they are on paper. And Mark and I will be back next week to review Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman!
You know, I really wish I could be excited. I really do. I envy you your enthusiasm. I want you to know that.
I can't. I'm going to go see it opening night by myself on my birthday. Yes, I'm going to be a 41-year-old. Thank you. I'm going to be a 41-year-old man who's going to leave his job after 12 hours and go sit in a theater filled with a bunch of other nerds by himself with no one. I'm going to take myself out on a date. And I firmly believe in the practice of taking yourself out on dates. I am the best date. I am my own best date. I don't talk during the movies. I go to eat at the restaurants I like. I can go at the pace that I like. It's the best. I much prefer taking myself out on dates than I do taking anyone else out on a date. And my wife knows this before you say another word.
She is well aware. The only thing I was going to say was I partially agree with that because I go to the movies with my family sometimes. For, you know, occasional group discounts or to get other perspectives on a movie. But I much prefer going to the movies alone, you know, essentially, you know, with myself. But I also really hate myself. So it provides this weird dichotomy. It's like, okay, you can be with this guy who you don't like or a bunch of other people and feel smothered.
In any case. So, yes, I'll be 41 years young. I'm going to go to the movies right after work. I might go get some Italian food before that, depending on what time my movie is. And I am going to be there seeing Wonder Woman. And, yes, I am very excited. However, and the whole point of this rant was, and then we're going to go, is the weekend after that, since I'm working this whole weekend and I can't, and then the plan originally was I was going to take my kids to go see a double feature. Well, I was going to take my daughter. Let me explain. No time. Let me sum up. On June 5th, I was going to, since I'm off Monday, I was going to take both my son and my daughter and my wife to go see Captain Underpants. Then we were going to go have lunch, and then I was going to get rid of my wife and son, and then I was just going to take my daughter to go see Wonder Woman. And that was going to be our creature feature double feature, science fiction double feature for the summer. I did this last year with her with Ninja Turtles, and Alice Through the Looking Glass. And a grand time was had by all. Yeah, it was. And a grand time was had by all. So this year, I thought, I'm going to take my kids to go see Captain Underpants, then ditch my son and my wife, and just go take my daughter to go see Wonder Woman, which she's very excited about, but not nearly as excited as Captain Underpants. However, she has dance camp and cheer camp that week, which means she's not available during the day for me to do that. So, Saturday, the 11th, or the 10th, it would be the 10th. Saturday the 10th, I believe. Yeah, I'm right about that. After my daughter's swimming class, or maybe Friday. No, Friday she still has dance camp. What am I saying? So either Saturday after dance camp or Sunday, before I go see Iron Maiden, and Ghost from the Pinnacle, to the pit. That's when we're going to do the double feature. We're going to get up in the morning or get up, go to swimming, and then after swimming, go see Captain Underpants, take a break, get rid of my wife and my son, then go see Wonder Woman. And that's what we're going to do in reviewing The Mummy. In case anyone was wondering after all that, the weekend that The Mummy comes out, we're just skipping that entirely. And instead of having a Damn You Hollywood on the 13th, as we normally would, we're going to do a TV party for The Flash Season 3. That's the current plan. You boo yourself. So,
I do, frequently.
All right.
I mean, do you think me not liking myself is a gimmick? Because it's not. Years and years of self-loathing have gone into my particular morose and caustic facade.
Thank you, Marvin the Paranoid Android. Close the show.
Now you made me sad. Because I seem to recall Alan Rickman voiced Marvin the Paranoid Android in the movie.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us here on...
I got it. After getting Mark's, you know, day planner for the upcoming weekend. Again, we will not have the mummy because... Come on.
We can't.
It looks like crap.
Just can't.
Look, we'll do this. We'll do this right now. Mark, what do you think? As a great critic once said, Mark, what do you think about the mummy?
It stinks.
Yeah. That's all we need. That's it. So we'll be taking that off. We'll be back the week after with... What's the week after?
Cars.
What was that?
Cars 3.
Ah, I hate my life sometimes.
And
I saw the original trailer for Cars and thought, oh, maybe this won't suck. Then every successive trailer has kind of kept killing my enthusiasm. So,
Oh, you've got a couple of weeks ahead of you that's going to be fantastic. Cars, then Transformers, and then I think Spider-Man.
Spider-Man I'm kind of looking forward to, mostly for Michael Keaton.
Yep, we have Cars, Transformers, I'm sorry, then Despicable Me 3, then Spider-Man.
Okay.
Then Planet of the Apes, and then finally, we have to get to Dunkirk. I won't go back there. I'll die.
Yeah. You know, I get that you try to make jokes out of serious things as a coping mechanism.
Yes.
But, yeah, no, I get a kick out of Michael Keaton a few years ago getting robbed of the Oscar for his role in Birdman. Now he's playing a Birdman who robs people. Random continuity things that I pay attention to. All right. Anyway, we'll be back next week for Wonder Woman, where, you know, we might wind, you know, someone will paint us as misogynists. I don't know. I might like it. I've been making jokes. I must withhold judgment until I see the actual movie. So we'll be back for that. Until then, thank you all for listening. He's Mark. You're not. I'm Robert. You don't want to be. And... we'll see you all next week. Until then, please continue to be well, be safe, and behave.